control. All about control. Every dictatorship has one obsession, and that's it. So in ancient Rome, they gave the people bread and circuses. They kept the populace busy with entertainment. But other dictatorships use other strategies to control ideas, the knowledge. How do they do that? Lower education. They limit culture. Censor information. They censor any means of individual expression. And it's important to remember this, that this is a pattern that repeats itself throughout history. Okay. See you next week.
White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the webmaster on 6/8/2015, Moon's Day. I'm filling in for Tom while he's off on a fact-finding mission. I hope to bring in a few shows that you may be a little bit different than what you're used to hearing with Tom. So the one I have today is one that is a group of shows that I've taken out the highlights from and made an audio that will give you the best information to avoid and potentially cure cancer. The doctors that are speaking in this audio, that is about a half an hour long, are not just people that have a website that have no doctorate degrees. One of the doctors is an associate professor at the Capital University for Integrative Medicine. Another one directed the North American Institute for the Advancement of Colon Therapy. A doctor who is an expert in nutrition and cancer with 30 years experience as a clinical nutritionist, and many more. This 30-minute audio was from 3 episodes out of 12 episodes, so there is a lot of information, and there's still more information if anyone's interested. It is called thetruthaboutcancer.com, but I took the summary of the most important information and consolidated it down into a half an hour from just 3 of the episodes. But if you want more information about these people and their organization, you can go to thetruthaboutcancer.com.
All our patients, whether it's cancer or any kind of chronic disease, it's always about lowering inflammation and improving and increasing immune system response. Because your immune system has to fight, fix, and repair against anything, right? So it's not just suppression, it's about strengthening. But the nice thing about the natural therapies is it turns on and off genes accordingly. So it's not just turning off genes always. It's also upregulation and downregulation. So curcumin, I mentioned, I showed you that slide today, yeah. And it shows certain genes are now turned on that our body already has this natural mechanism of fighting cancer, for example. And we want to keep stimulating that. What happens is as we get older, through other things of environment, lifestyle, stress, diet, those genes and those transcription factors and those proteins turn off. So we all are born with it. We just want to keep stimulating it. Right, and the nice thing is that these natural therapies can, you know, turn on the things that we want to turn on and turn off the things we want to turn off.
The immune system. Okay, so we're starting to get the full picture here. We just heard from 5 medical doctors that all talked about the fact that cancer is a result of a compromised immune system. When I visited Las Vegas, I interviewed Dr. Keith Scott Mumby, who had some valuable information to share about the immune system.
Talk about white blood cells, the immune system, and inflammation, as it all relates to cancer.
Okay, well, you know, part of the question ties, what is the basic model for cancer? You know, there's the stem cell model and the metabolic model and so on. But certainly at the core, if not the cause, many people, and I'm one of them, see cancer as basically a disease of the immune system. Especially in our modern world, I don't think there's any way you're going to stop cells firing off and going wrong and turning into rogue cells. It's just too many toxins. But a good immune system will pick them up very quickly and eliminate them. So in a very strong sense, cancer is a disease of the immune system. So you want to do everything in your power to help the immune system. That means, you know, the right kind of nutrients that will help it. It also means removing the stresses that will stop it working. And they're all inflammatory in nature. You know, I mentioned food and, you know, food, inflammatory foods, but there's chemicals, you know, pesticides, pollutants, you know, bisphenol, all of these things, loads of those too. And then don't forget heavy metal toxicity, you know, mercury and lead and these things not only have their poisonous powers, but they're highly inflammatory too. So it's very important to unburden the immune system.
Talk about briefly the connection between sugar and cancer cells.
A cancer is there's certain common characteristics that all cancer cells have. One of those characteristics is that cancer is an obligate glucose metabolizer, meaning that it has an obligation to metabolize glucose. It only survives on sugar. Other types of components that would be commonalities in all cancer, cancer is a highly anaerobic scenario. Cancer likes an anaerobic scenario. Cancer does not like oxygen. Oxygen works as a drug against cancer. Another component would be cancer is an acidic process. So in an alkaline environment, cancer does not do well. So there's many common characteristics that cancer has. One of those is that it is an obligate glucose metabolizer. So if you can reduce the amount of simple sugars, you are effectively going to be reducing the food supply to the cancer. Patrick Quillen, who wrote Beating Cancer with Nutrition, a very good friend of mine, in his book says that 42 to 46% of cancer patients die of cachexia, of malnutrition. How many oncologists are addressing malnutrition? No one. In fact, what do? They give people Ensure, which is sugar. And you know that cancer is an obligate glucose metabolizer. It needs sugar to survive. In fact, one of the techniques is to reduce the amount of sugar so that it can't feed the cancer. But they're actually giving gasoline to the fire and then expecting to put out the fire. You can't put out a fire with gasoline.
I wanted to get the opinion of Dr. Patrick Quillen, a nutritional expert who wrote a book called Beating Cancer with Nutrition about the effects of sugar on cancer cells and their insidious relationship.
Cancer is a sugar feeder. Cancer is what's called an obligate glucose metabolizer, meaning that there is a dramatic uptake of glucose in the cells of tumor cells. If you can lower gut and blood glucose, you can help to slow down cancer.
Basically, when we take the sugar out, we're taking out the preferred fuel source for the cancer cells. So they become weakened in that state. As opposed to when we're fueling our body with a lot of sugar, not only does it cause the free radical damage, which is what actually damages the mitochondria to begin with and creates this whole process, but at the same time, we're also providing the preferred fuel source for more cancer cell development in our body. See, what most people don't realize is all of us have cancer cells. We're all developing them every single day. Typically, our immune system would hunt them down and regulate them. However, when we've got immune deficiencies, which is another problem with sugar, it weakens our body's innate immune system. And so when that happens, now these cancer cells will start to grow without being checked, being kept in check by our body's natural immune response. So we just continue to dump in the sugar. Again, we're weakening our immune system and we're strengthening the cancer cells. We're actually giving them an advantage in our body. So, you know, you can feed one or the other. You can feed your immune system and strengthen that, or you can feed the cancer and strengthen that. And I think if we all had this understanding and this knowledge and we really, really knew that, obviously we want to feed our immune system.
While I was at the Cancer Control Society convention in Los Angeles earlier this year, I was able to speak with Bob Wright of the American Anti-Cancer Institute.
Another thing that sugar does, and most people don't know about, is the average amount of sugar in one can of, let's say, Coca-Cola, it's probably 9 or 10 teaspoons of sugar in there. That's enough sugar to effectively shut down a minimum of 50% of your immune system for 4 hours. One 12-ounce Coke. If you're a cancer patient, can you afford that? Since the immune system is the only thing that can heal you, we simply can't afford that. You got to avoid all the sugar. If you take a Diet Pepsi or Coke, it ranges from 2.5 to 2.7 pH, very acidic. You know, an acid, if you're a cancer patient, is one of your main problems to begin with, acid and inflammation. And we know from Dr. Weeks, we've known this before, that inflammation causes metastases of cancer as well. But it would take you 32 12-ounce glasses of 9.5 pH water to neutralize that one 12-ounce can of Coca-Cola.
Wow.
That's why we're acidic, and that's why we're struggling today.
The oncologists use sugar to carry the radiologic molecule into the cancer cell to show up on the X-ray, the PET scan. The oncologist knows that sugar feeds cancer. Because that's why he uses it as a Trojan horse. And when you finish your chemo in a conventional setting, they give you cookies and ice cream or candy. That is tantamount to putting gasoline on a fire. That means these oncologists are guilty of crimes against humanity. They are killing their patients.
I was in LA earlier this year speaking at the Cancer Control Society convention, and I sat down with Dr. Tony Jimenez, and he shed some light on this information.
As physicians and as practitioners or advisors or counselors, we always tell patients and people in general, let's enhance your immune system if you have cancer. Because we know that the immune system takes care of a cold to cancer and everything in between. So that's the thought. Let's optimize the immune system, and we've gone a long way in addressing a cancer situation. But let's think about it this way. We know that in 1 cubic centimeter of a tumor, there's approximately 1 billion cancer cells, and that's billion with a B.
Okay.
65% of those cells at any one time are dormant. 35% of those cells are active. So they're in the synthesis phase of the cell cycle, not in the resting phase, okay? Remember mitosis in 101 biology, right? This is what we're talking about. So of all those cells, 99% of the cells are what's called non-cancer stem cells.
Okay.
1% about are cancer stem cells. So when someone has chemo radiation, they are not only suppressing the immune system, but they're making the cancer stem cells more active and more aggressive.
And that's the boogers you got to worry about.
Those are the boogers you have to worry about. Why? Because they survive in the bloodstream. They're immortal if you don't do something about them.
Right.
Not like the non-cancer stem cells that the chemo is affecting. So, wow, someone has a 80% reduction in tumor, or now you're in remission. And that's...
You got rid of the good cells, and the bad cells you just strengthened.
Right. And the non-cancer stem cells are not necessarily good cells, Ty, but they're cells that have a finite lifespan, and they make the bulk of the tumor.
Okay.
You see, so then the tumor decreases because the chemo and radiation can affect the non-cancer stem cell. So the patient has a PET scan, MRI, CAT scan, bone scan, whatever it is, and they have a false impression by their physician that now they can't see the tumor. So you're in remission, but the cancer stem cells were never addressed with the chemo and never will with the chemo and radiation. So I'm going to your question.
No, this is about fantastic information.
Yeah. So the cancer stem cells are cells that survive in the bloodstream. They're like five-star generals. They've been tested and in battle, and they're going to metastasize. See, non-cancer stem cells cannot metastasize. Okay. Only cancer stem cells can. So when we want to address the immune system in cancer, the problem is the immune system cannot recognize cancer stem cells. Why? Because they have a protein on the cell surface that shields them or cloaks them from the immune system.
Okay.
Dr. Robert Rowan, a good friend of ours, I think it was the January 2014 newsletter, Second Opinion, he wrote an article on cancer stem cells' ability to cloak or hide themselves from the immune system. So a cancer patient may have the best immune system according to white blood cells, T cells, lymphocytes, natural killer cells, but is that immune system recognizing and able to penetrate a cancer stem cell? That's the question.
And what you're saying is that the cancer stem cells have some kind of a cloaking to where the immune system can't see them.
Exactly. And that's well described in conventional scientific medical literature. This is not an alternative thought. This is duly scientifically proven.
According to Dr. Jimenez, the immune system cannot see the cancer stem cells, which he calls the five-star generals that are directing the invasion. So what can we do to make these cells visible to our immune system?
There are substances that have been shown to attack cancer stem cells scientifically, like metformin, okay, elagic acid, green tea extract, But the list is very small because, first of all, it's very difficult to extract cancer stem cells from a human and keep them alive in the lab for them to be studied. There's only a few labs that do that, and this is a very, very expensive process, right, in the millions of dollars to study cancer stem cells.
All the more reason to eat fresh berries like raspberries and blackberries and strawberries, and to keep drinking your green tea, since they all contain high amounts of ellagic acid. And as Dr. Hyman has just mentioned, ellagic acid targets cancer stem cells, which are otherwise invisible to the immune system.
Every cancer diet's a weight loss diet, because anytime you're cutting out simple sugars and high glycemic foods, you're going to lose weight. Simple as that.
And any anti-cancer diet is low in sugar because we don't want to fuel the cell, the cancer cells, right?
Cancer cells, Otto Warburg told us in 1932 that cancer cells only thrive on simple sugars, not complex carbohydrates, not fats or proteins. And he was right then, but conventional oncology has completely ignored that. In fact, if you go in any infusion center in any hospital in the country, you'll see big bowl of candy, usually, and soft drinks.
Yeah.
So they totally ignore the properties of the cancer cell.
What are GMOs?
Genetically modified organisms. You take genes from one species and force it into the DNA of other species. Now, the GM crops on the market, there's 9 of them, and the primary traits are either herbicide tolerance or pesticide production. So herbicide tolerance, Roundup Ready is the most popular. Roundup Ready, soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa. They're engineered with genes from bacteria and pieces of virus, etc., not to die. The plant doesn't die when it's sprayed with Roundup herbicide, which normally kills plants. So it makes weeding easier for farmers. They can simply spray over the crops and kill all the weeds, but not the Roundup Ready crops.
Mm.
And the other genetically modified trait that's popular is pesticide production. They take a gene from bacteria in the soil called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT for short, and take that gene, which produces a known insecticide, and put it into corn and cotton. So when a bug, certain types of bugs, eat or try to bite the plant, the toxin gets released and then it breaks open little holes in their stomach walls and they die.
Mm.
So now we eat that insecticide and we also eat the Roundup laden crops. So we're eating two types of poisons in these GM crops. The FDA does not require a single safety study on GMOs. Now, this was determined in a policy in 1992 that was overseen by Michael Taylor. Michael Taylor is the former attorney to Monsanto, and he was given a position that was designed for him by the FDA when the agency was told by the White House to promote GMOs. And Taylor's policy falsely claimed that the agency wasn't aware of information showing that GMOs were significantly different, therefore no testing or labeling was necessary. Companies like Monsanto could determine on their own if their GMOs are safe. And Monsanto told us that Agent Orange and PCBs and DDT were safe and got that wrong. Maybe they'll get it right with GMOs, is the thinking by the FDA. Taylor then became Monsanto's vice president and chief lobbyist. Now he's back at the FDA as the U.S. food safety czar.
It's almost like you have the fox guard in the hen house.
It's more than almost. We have a situation where the claims in the policy that they weren't aware of information showing that GMOs were different was a complete lie.
Mm.
It was a total fabrication. The lawsuit forced 44,000 secret FDA memos into the public domain, and it showed that the overwhelming consensus among the scientists working at the FDA was exactly the opposite. They said GMOs might create allergens, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems, urged their superiors to require testing, complained about the drafts of the policy, and their concerns were ignored and even denied.
Mm. Now, when you say that they are not significantly, or at least Monsanto said they are not significantly different than what?
Than the normal foods.
The normal food.
Right.
Oh, so since they're not significantly different than normal food, they don't need to tell us that they're doing this to the
foods? They don't need to tell us. They don't need to test it. They can just put it on the market and assume that it's safe. And if they want to do tests, they can do tests. And if they don't want, and the tests that they do, tobacco science, completely rigged to avoid finding problems. We catch them red-handed.
So the only testing is required are self-tests that they submit, and then, of course, it's going
to... They can submit them if they want, and they usually, if they do, submit just summaries that will never give a reviewer enough information to determine safety.
Mm.
And so the tests, you know, the tests typically on animals end in 90 days. So you feed an animal, a rat, for example, let's say 33% of its diet is a genetically modified corn, and for 90 days. And if it looks good, after 90 days, you feed it to humans for their entire lives. Now, a research team head by Dr. Seralini decided to extend the study of 90 days to 2 years, the approximate lifespan of a rat. Now, Seralini had been reviewing the submissions to France and to the European Union by Monsanto and saw that Roundup-ready corn fed to rats showed more than 50 different statistically significant changes in the animals compared to the control. And Monsanto said, oh, there's no problem. And Seralini says, what do you mean there's no problem? This is very serious, and published it, showing that there was a very significant signs of toxicity. So he secretly extended the study using the same type of rats, the same control group size, but many, many more parameters that they tested for. And starting after the 90 days, in the next month, the first rat started to get tumors. And by the end, up to 80% of the female rats had tumors, almost all of them mammary gland tumors. Up to 50% of the male rats had tumors, compared to far less in the controls.
Wow, that's truly staggering information from Mr. Smith. The Seralini study did show that the GMO corn was causing premature death and cancer. Now, that's important to me because I've got four kids, and I want them to be healthy and to live a long, healthy life.
Roundup can promote cancer in many, many ways. First of all, it's an antibiotic, and it kills off beneficial gut bacteria, causing an overgrowth of the bad gut bacteria. Now, this overgrowth of negative gut bacteria is linked to certain cancers, colorectal cancer, for example. The overgrowth of negative gut bacteria can produce zonulin, which can create leaky gut. It opens the gaps in the cell walls on the intestines, and leaky gut is linked to cancer. Roundup also damages a set of enzymes called the CYP enzymes, which are part of the detoxification process, and CYP enzymes are linked to cancer. And one of the problems with Roundup is it can disable some of those enzymes that are involved with detoxification. So any toxic influence from the environment can be much more toxic when you're also exposed to Roundup or its active ingredient glyphosate. Through the gut bacteria overgrowth, it can promote inflammation in the gut, and inflammation is also linked to cancer. So Roundup has all these different ways, like a perfect storm. Now, there are certain tissues that are the target tissues for Roundup, and they accumulates in those tissues, and those are the cancers that are on the rise in the U.S. population. For example, thyroid cancer, liver cancer, and kidney cancer. Now, the BT toxin produced by the corn, because it promotes allergic reactions or immune system reactions in humans and animals, can create inflammation. And again, inflammation is linked to cancer. Now, the BT toxin, it's interesting. They found the BT toxin and Roundup in the blood of pregnant women tested in Canada. In fact, 93% of the pregnant women had BT toxin in their blood, and so too did 80% of their unborn fetuses. Now, the BT toxin may have gotten into the blood through the leaky gut that it itself created by poking holes in the cell walls. If it gets in the blood, it can be cytotoxic, damaging the red blood cells. And this was found in the case of a mouse study where BT toxin damaged the red blood cells. If it gets into the fetus don't have blood-brain barriers well developed, so it might end up in the brains of the fetuses. And so you have a hole-poking toxin in the brains of the next generation in North America. If the BT gene transfers to gut bacteria and continues to function, it can convert our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories, producing BT toxin 24/7, which might poke holes along the cell walls, causing inflammation and all sorts of gastrointestinal disorders, possibly creating leaky gut, which is also linked to cancer, And that might explain this production of the BT toxin, why 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada had it in their blood, because they were producing it in their gut. As far as the gut bacteria, I mean, it is now a huge source of, a huge topic of study. Mm. Everyone's into the microbiome now. It's like it's the new tofu. Everyone's into the microbiome. And so we have a situation where the devastation of Roundup becomes bigger and bigger the more they realize this, because it is a potent antibiotic, but it is selective. It kills the lactobacillus and the bifidobacteria, the stuff that's good for us.
The ones that you want in yogurt.
The stuff that you're buying and paying for, and then you, you know, wash it down with something with Roundup in it, and you just kill everything you've just put in there, plus more. And it allows the overgrowth of salmonella or botulism or E. coli, the negative stuff.
Let me ask you this. So you talked about the Roundup Ready corn and the soy potentially that's sprayed with Roundup. Do they use Roundup or glyphosate on other non-organic vegetables as well, or is it just the corn and soy?
No, no. It's used as a ripening agent. They spray it on wheat, on barley, on rye, on lentils, on sweet potatoes, on sugarcane. There's 160 or so different fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, etc., that are allowed high residues because of this now practice of using it as what's called a desiccant or ripening agent. Not every farmer uses it, but it's hard to tell where it is and where it isn't because it's not labeled. So that's why buying organic is much safer.
Let me ask you this. One of the common arguments that you get from those that are producing the GMO crops is that we need this to feed the world.
They need it to pay their salaries. GMOs are so inept at feeding the world that the biggest paper in the world, the biggest study, more than 400 scientists, sponsored by the UN and signed on by more than 58 countries, concluded that the current generation of GMOs has nothing to offer feeding the hungry world, eradicating poverty, or creating sustainable agriculture. That's the ISTAD report. In fact, the Union of Concerned Scientists study showed that it actually doesn't increase yields, and the USDA recent study verified that GMOs do not increase yields and in many cases reduce yields.
Everyone has cancer cells in their body. The only permanent cure to cancer is your immune system. And nutrition gives your immune system the firepower it needs to keep you well. So without nutrition, you're fighting with no weapons. Without your immune system, you're fighting with no army. Mm. Chemotherapy destroys your army. It destroys your immune system. Mm. Not only that, it causes secondary cancers in the body. It makes existing cancer stem cells more aggressive. And it causes a host of lifelong, potentially lifelong, damages to the body, from brain damage to hearing loss to neuropathy with loss of the use of your hands and feet to kidney and bladder damage. I mean, bone damage, heart damage, lung damage. Mm-hmm. It's just total collateral damage from chemotherapy.
So a lot of times you can give chemotherapy, the tumor goes away, but you also destroy the immune system. Then the cancer comes back with a vengeance. That's how you get rid of cancer, through your immune system, through systems that are already within you that have failed. So what we have to do is get them to work again. And that difference has made a tremendous difference in the results.
Let's look at hormones and the immune system and cancer. Is there a connection between the three?
There's no difference in the molecular aspect of the hormones that are in men and women. Women have testosterone, men have estrogens, both have progesterone and corticosteroids and all these. What's different is the amount. Right. So women have a higher amount of estrogens. Men have a higher amount of testosterone. Women have a higher amount of estrogen receptors. And men have a higher amount of testosterone receptors. Right. And that's key, that marriage between the receptor and the hormone, such that, you know, I can give a woman testosterone injections, she will never get as big as a man because she doesn't have the receptors that a man has. We can put estrogen into a man, you're not going to turn him into a woman, right, because he doesn't have the receptors for those estrogens, right? So, but we all have the same, we all produce the same exact molecules as far as estrogens and testosterone and DHEA and progesterone and these other hormones. it's important that we understand for these estrogens, the human ones anyway, that again, the one of the pharmacologic characteristics of estrogens is that they make cells multiply, right? And this is very important in pregnancy, right? Because that fetus has to grow so much. And so during pregnancy, estrogen levels go way up, and we get, again, we get exponential growth of a fetus, right? Other cells, if they get exposed to higher levels of estrogen, right, then they can grow faster also. So in breast cancer, in prostate cancer, other cancers, if estrogen levels are elevated, right, or if we're exposed to a more potent estrogen, right, and so this is where we get into environmental estrogens, then that cancer can grow faster, right? Mm. And it's not necessarily that endogenous estrogens cause cancer, right? But they can certainly, like insulin, right? That's the other cancer-promoting hormone. They can make the fire burn hotter. Yeah.
Okay. Great analogy. So it's like more gasoline on the fire when you have a higher level of estrogen than you should have.
Correct.
Which, you know, it's lots of articles today that we're reading about the effect of what they call xenoestrogens.
Correct.
Which are so fake estrogens in the environment.
Right, right.
So can you talk about that a little bit in relationship to cancer?
Right, and so that's one of the reasons, you know, why we see such a proliferation of cancer in the West, right, and haven't seen it in the West. We're seeing it more in third world countries now. But because of our exposure to environmental and pharmaceutical estrogens, right, that has the effect of throwing more gasoline on the fire. So some of the insecticides, pesticides, fungicides that we use, they have an estrogen effect, right? These are what we call xenoestrogens, xeno meaning foreign. So those, again, long-term exposure. So we have to think about estrogen exposure in lifetime exposure as we do like with radiation exposure. So if you're a radiation technologist, right, you wear a little badge on you that gives us a Geiger counter amount of radiation that you are getting exposed to over a lifetime. And you get to hear, you know, we say, well, you can't be exposed to any more radiation. Same thing with these estrogens, right? So there is a lifetime exposure of estrogen that dictates your risk for different cancers, right? So you are producing estrogens as a human. As a man, you're producing estrogen. As a woman, they're producing estrogens. Women produce more. So if we go adding on top of that environmental estrogens, then that increases your lifetime exposure of estrogen. If you take birth control pills, that increases your lifetime exposure of estrogen. If you take synthetic hormone replacement after after menopause, that increases your lifetime exposure of estrogen. If you stay overweight with these fat cells that are born of inflammation, these growth factors, right, that is increasing your lifetime exposure of estrogen.
So it's really a cumulative effect when we're talking about the
exactly.
exposure to estrogens.
Exactly.
As opposed to just a one-off.
Right.
Google aspartame and look up all the different names for aspartame. It comes under quite a few different names, in not just an artificial sweetener. It has other chemical names, and they'll in the labeling process they'll label it under different things. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always say aspartame. Okay,
sure. But is it toxic to us?
Is it very toxic? I always joke with my students that it's a preservative. You know, because it breaks down into formaldehyde. That's what they preserve dead bodies with.
So what?
It's not an antioxidant, though. So.
What is the chemical makeup of aspartame? So you said it breaks down into formaldehyde.
As aspartame is metabolized, it ends up as formaldehyde.
Okay.
And formaldehyde is a toxic chemical itself. It's cancer-causing. It's a corrosive chemical.
It's embalming fluid,
it's
right?
It's what's embalming, exactly. That's what's in embalming fluid.
Got it.
That's what they use to preserve dead bodies, okay? It's the embalming fluid. Formaldehyde is, number one, a neurotoxin.
Okay.
Okay. And it was originally designed as a neurotoxin in biological warfare weapons, okay? It was a nerve gas component, okay? So when we eat this, we ingest aspartame, it converts into formaldehyde and then starts to eat or corrode our nervous system. It's toxic to our nervous system.
Wow. So we're eating something that was that is potentially a
biological
warfare.
Yes, agent. Exactly. Now, the symptoms of neurotoxicity due to aspartame are identical to the symptoms of MS, multiple sclerosis. Mm. Identical. It can give you the exact same symptomology. And we've had, I can't tell you how many patients that we've pulled off of aspartame, off of all artificial sweeteners of any kind, and their diagnosis for MS had disappeared.
Well, I've read in the literature about the initial days of aspartame in the late 60s, early 70s with G.D. Searle, right. And apparently they found that it was eating holes in the brains of the rats or of the monkeys that they tested it on.
Exactly. It's a neurotoxin, and it's corrosive. It does. It's, in essence, what salt does to a car, body, it's,
We saw
eats holes in it. Exactly.
So aspartame does the same thing.
Does the exact same thing. Does what salt would do to the body of a car, only it does it to your brain and your spinal cord.
Are you thirsty for another diet soda now? I bet you aren't after hearing that information from Dr. Newsom. But we hear a lot of misinformation on the television. I mean, if you listen, you probably think that sunlight's toxic. But is it really?
If you don't have enough vitamin D3 in your body, you're setting yourself up. And almost all Americans don't have enough, very minimum amounts.
And how would you get that?
Well, you get it through the sunlight, of course. The sun is...
Isn't in the sun bad?
Well, if you listen to modern medicine, it is.
Right.
But it's totally a fraud, too. You know what's bad is the sunscreens you put on to keep yourself from getting the UVB rays that work with the cholesterol in the skin to form the vitamin D3 that your body craves and needs for so many different interactions in your body. You know, the areas that get skin cancer, you think they're where they see the most sun? They're not. They're up where I live in Seattle, in the northern part of the hemisphere. And they actually get skin cancer on the bottom of their feet and things like that that never see the sun. Sun doesn't cause cancer. The lack of D3 can. The sunscreens you put on your body can cause cancer because they're full of carcinogens. So you need D3. And if you don't get it from the sun, we know you can get it from a good cod liver oil now. There's not very many good ones left because they're taking the A and D out of them and replacing them with synthetics or not at all. But there is one good one left I talk about in my book, Blue Ice Fermented Cod Liver Oil from Green Pasture, that is one of the last best ones. And it's wonderful. D3, iodine, both imperative. Everyone's short of iodine because we eat bread today that has bromine in it. When 40 years ago, we had iodine in our bread, so we get it every day. We have bromine now, and as you know, Ty, we have so many thyroid issues and thyroid cancer today, and it's because the bromine and the fluoride and the chlorine sit on the iodine receptors in the thyroid, prevent the uptake of iodine. You don't have iodine, you're in trouble. You know Mike Adams very well, and so you saw when he came out with quoting the study that said 77% of all cancers can be prevented if you have enough D3. But if you add iodine into that, it's probably 80 or 85% of all cancers can be prevented if you have enough iodine and D3.
The sun actually doesn't cause cancer. It's the sunscreens with the toxic chemicals that cause cancer. There was a 2009 German study that showed that the sunlight is 3 to 5 times better than any other substance we know of at stimulating the immune system. But what about cell phones? What about EMF? These are things that are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. EMF, electromagnetic frequencies, cell phones. Everybody's carrying a cell phone and a handheld. Is there any relationship between these and cancer?
For people who don't think that EMFs are a problem, I encourage them to go to the bioinitiativereport.org to take a look. 27 scientists from various countries looked at 10 years of data, and their conclusion was that EMFs cause cancer, brain tumors, disrupt the immune system, suppress the reproductive functions of the body, affect your sleep and your memory. So EMFs are a huge problem. And it's been labeled one of the most insidious toxins on the planet because we don't see it, we don't feel it, we don't taste it, but it's affecting us 24/7. For example, in this office here, you can go to antennasearch.org and find out how many antenna are within a 4-mile radius. So I just Googled and put the address here. There's 91 antennas, cell towers, and 144 antennas within a 4-mile radius of this location.
Wow.
Now, as you move closer to big cities like Atlanta, you're looking at hundreds, like 200, 300, 400 cell towers in just a few miles. So we're literally swimming in a soup of EMFs and electrosmog.
So when we say EMF, we're talking about electromagnetic frequencies that would disrupt the body's normal flow of energy, correct?
Absolutely. Because if EMFs can go through brick walls, what do you think it's doing when it goes through our body? It's causing damage, and that damage is accumulative.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. Taxi's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome, I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. There's so many times I've let you down. So many times I've played around. I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I think of you. Every song I sing for you. When I come back, I'll wear your wedding ring. Like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes, I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the time I won't have to say. Kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.